Blog Talk Radio.
Howdy, welcome to Homemade Business 101. My name is Isaiah. I have the pleasure of introducing the host. You know him, he's everybody's hero, my best friend. Will you please join me in welcoming my granddaddy, Baba Jahi?
Well, good evening, and welcome to part two of Wealth Building Strategies Concerning Taxes and Being Able to Save on Your Taxes Through Taking Advantage of the IRS Laws for Small and Home-Based Business Owners. We did part one yesterday, and we covered part of the home office expense yesterday, but we're going to dive a little bit more into that today, and then we're going to talk about how to prepare and beat a dreaded IRS audit if for some reason you ever got audited. And three, we will close out with how to make sure that the IRS does not classify your business as a hobby. So this is very, very important information we're going to go over here this evening. And we want to thank you for tuning in. Had over 70-some people that tuned in yesterday to yesterday's show. And so we want to thank those who are tuning in today. And I want to thank my grandson again, Isaiah, as he does each and every time we come on these airways, introducing this show to our listening audience. So God bless you. Thank you for tuning in. Get yourself a pencil, a piece of paper out, or ink pen and some paper so you can take some copious notes. Because we're going to give you some information tonight that can make taxes less stressful for you and show you how to get more money back. All right. Hold on here a second. Put this phone on a charger so I don't die out on you while we're doing this show. Okay. Home business expense. And most of the information that I'm sharing with you, we're sharing from one of my mentors, Mr. Sandy Bakken, his book called Lower Your Taxes Big Time, Wealth Building, Tax Reduction, Secrets from an IRS Inside. Go on Amazon, and I would suggest everyone to get themselves a copy. Okay, Chapter 6, Home Office, the Misunderstood Key to Saving $15,000 Every 5 Years. He starts the chapter off with the following. You might have heard some of this, and so that's why I'm going to be reading it, so that you can understand the erroneous information that people be giving folks. Is the home office really worth it? Be honest. Do you believe or have you heard from your accountant that taking a home office deduction isn't worth the risk or hassle? I'll bet your answer to this question is yes. And I've talked to people who I've done taxes for who told me that, you know, somebody shared information with them that the home office expense was not worth the risk and it was a hassle. One of those people in particular that shared that information with me was my very own mom, who had someone that was helping her with her taxes, who was a certified public accountant. You know, my mother was all gung-ho about information that the person had shared with her, but my mother being a former government employee, we was able to go over regulations from the IRS because she understands government regulations. We was able to get her to download and read the IRS rules for herself. And then she saw that the person that was advising her didn't know what they were talking about. So, you know, a lot of people are scared into doing things because they talk to someone and they say, well, Mr. Jahi, I talked to a certified public accountant, and he told me that I shouldn't do that. Also, another thing that they'll tell people is that, hey, your home is not zoned commercially. The IRS could care less about local zoning. That's not the issue. The issue is how do you use your house as a place of business. The home office deduction is like having a bunch of pregnant dollar bills. They give birth to many more dollars. And here's an example. Let's say if you had a house, $1,000, the home office can generate over $15,000 in cash every 5 years. Say if you have mortgage interest of $10,401 and being modest, if you use 15% of your household business. I use 60% of mine. My figure would be higher than this, but just being modest, use about 15% of your household business, and that means you would get an extra $215 back off of your mortgage interest for your taxes. Your real estate taxes, again, if you being modest, if you used about 15% of your home, your real estate taxes was $947 a year off of your mortgage interest and all of that, and that's another extra $20. Let's say if your utilities, I don't know where this would be, but say they're using this example, utilities was like $1,700 a year, and again, 15% of your home, then you're going to end up with an extra $146 back on your tax. Most people, and I'm doing taxes for, their figures are way higher than this. If your homeowner's insurance was $310, and that's about another $26 back on your tax. And if you had some general repairs, about $600 in the course of the year, it's another $51. Pest control, you know, taking care of that. If you have, you know, money you spend on that, say you spend about $400 of that, that's about another $34. Repairs to your office, or if you're using the house at all, about $200, another $108 back. Depreciation on your home office furniture could range anywhere from $500 up to like about $1,000. And depreciation on your home is around about $2,545 a year off a $200,000 home. That's another $218. And the cash in pocket from the home office deduction off a $200,000 house with those different figures that I just gave you is an extra $1,837. Now, when you add that to the business miles that the person does, and a total first year cash, that's $2,419, a 6% annuity rate, in terms of 6% interest, back over the 5 years. Multiply that out, that's $14,554 in tax deduction over a 5 year period. So, that home deduction is very, very important. You can see, this is a modest example, a very, very modest example. In most cases, it's going to be 2 to 3 times that, anywhere from $30,000 to $45,000. Again, we're using a modest example here that basically can fit the bare bone minimum deal for anybody. Now, the general rule is that you can deduct your home or dwelling unit insofar as it's used as a residence. However, if you meet the home office rules, you can deduct some expenses related to your residence. The law states that a home office deduction is available only to the extent that a portion of the dwelling unit, your home, is used exclusively on a regular basis as one of the following: your principal place of business, a place of business that you use to meet and deal with patients or customers in the normal course of your trade or business. So, in most cases, especially business that I'm involved with, we do what's called travel parties where we have people come to our house and we meet and share information with them. So you meet the definition of being able to have your house as a principal place of business. A principal place of business. This is very, very important. And, you know, here's some examples. Okay, Dr. Solomon was an anesthesiologist. He rendered his services in the hospital but billed his patients and kept his books from home. The hospital is where he performs his important services. The second test is a time test. If you work over 50% of your total working hours out of your home will qualify as a principal place of business. This is important to you because the IRS requires all business refers to examine where do they do the most important functions for them. If there's a clear answer, this is the test that is used, and you never resort to the time test. Some examples of major factors the IRS use would be where you meet your customers, where you render your service, or where contracts are signed. So, I say a sales representative spends 30 hours per week taking orders from clients in various stores and spends 12 hours per week working at home on administrative business. Visiting with clients and taking orders will be deemed the most important function for his business, and he would not be eligible for the home office deduction under this rule. Some facts as above, but but the orders are placed over the phone. And the sales representative spends 30 hours a week working from his home and 12 hours seeing customers. He would be allowed a home office deduction because the most important aspect of his business is selling and taking orders. If there was any confusion, he met the 50% test time. So it's important. And here's another example. John, a self-employed plumber, spends most of his time in homes repairing and installing plumbing. He has an office at home that he uses exclusively and regularly for his administrative and management activities, such as billing customers, making appointments, and ordering supplies. His home qualifies as a principal office for the home office deduction. Depends on where you spend your time. It's just like, I can give you examples as we going through this. I have travel parties, in which I do some in my home and then some I do at restaurants. So all of my paperwork, all of my appointments, all of my phone calls, and then it's like this radio show I do from the comfort of my home. So I do more than 50% of what I do for my home-based business from the comfort of my home. And so thus allows me to do the home-based business deduction write-off. So that's a key element for you, is that doing 50% or more of whatever your business function is from your home. Now, again, as I mentioned the other day, what you have to do is determine the square footage of your home and then the area that you use for business. Like I said, I use 60% of my home, so 60% of the square foot of my home becomes the business deduction, which means 60% of the mortgage, 60% of the utility bills, 60% of the repairs, 60% of my upkeep, such as my landscaping bill, a person that does my yard and take care of all of that. All of those become tax deductions because when I'm improving my home, I'm also improving my place for business. As I mentioned also, one of the things you want to do is have your visitor sign a log book. If you claim a home office deduction because you use the office in normal course of business to meet deal with clients, prospects, have your visitors sign a guest book each time they come to your office. A guest book need not be formal, just a record of business contacts who meet with you in your home office. It should contain the name of the guest, date of the visit, and the purpose. Remember, burden of proof is on you. If you claim you use your home office to see clients and customers, you must be able to prove that clients, patients, customers, or colleagues were physically present in your home. Also, one of the other things I tell people is so important is keeping a work activity log for time spent in your home office. Showing how much time you spent working in a home office is important because it establishes that you put in your substantial administrative time and worked in the office regularly, at least 10 hours per week. Thus, a work activity log, which could be a meticulously annotated daily diary, a tax organizer, constitutes an excellent supporting document establish where you spent your work time. This does not need to be elaborate. You already have a daily diary. Simply use it as an activity log. If you're working in your home office, you simply can write home office or abbreviation and note the time spent there. So, like this today, and part of my home office work, I had two conference calls that I was on. I got those listed, the time they were, how long they were, and I'm doing this radio show this evening, which is 30 minutes. Got that listed. Then I also made phone calls to clients. I also reviewed emails. Also went to my back office to go over some business information. I got all of that stuff listed in a work log so that I can make sure that I can account for what I did today in terms of working my home-based business. Okay, so these are some of the things that you want to make sure you keep good count of. So here's a summary. Home office deduction is a tax-deductible gold mine. If you're eligible, you should clearly take the deduction. Earning well over $15,000 every 5 years should convince you that it's worth the trouble. The best ways to ensure home office deduction area to use for your home, the principal place of business or where you meet and greet customers in the normal course of business, having a separate structure that isn't attached to your home. This is a greenhouse or art studio. Use your home to store inventory of product supplies or a meeting space or opportunity presentation room. Audit-proof your home office by taking yearly pictures, keeping blueprints of the home that clearly show your home office square footage, and having business cards, stationery, and yellow pages list of your home office address and then your phone number. This is another very important thing, taking pictures of your home office, because if you ever get audited, which we're going to go into next, that's one of the things you want to be able to show the IRS. You can show them a picture of how your office is set up. That all expenses for equipment that you use in your home for business, even if you never claim a home office adjustment. You rent a copy machine, you have a computer, a laptop, fax machine. This is office equipment that you want to make sure you deduct your home base. All right, let's go to the next aspect, beating the dreaded IRS audit. Most taxpayers should be as aggressive as possible. Learn your rights on audit. Yes, you do have some significant rights. Learn the 9 ways to reduce your chances of an IRS audit. Okay, so let's say you get audited. If you get audited, you want the name of the person, the badge number of the person, the date of the call, the time of the call, the questions asked, and the answers given. You record all of these items in the log, the IRS ordinarily will waive penalties. Okay, so you want to make sure you get that information from the person. What is you being audited? You want to get things specific. What is a specific question? And when you find out the specific question, then you make sure that the audit stays around that. Your taxpayer's rights. You have significant rights as a taxpayer, and you need to be aware of those rights. As you have seen in Senate hearings, the IRS can exercise significant power. A good example happened about 10 years ago. A couple ordered a tax strategy program and tax organizer. About half an hour after they attended a seminar was over, and after they had gone home, they came back to the seminar to cancel their order. The wife was crying. What happened was that when they got home, they received a notice from the IRS had seized their bank accounts and all of their outstanding checks were bouncing. Now, without any funds left, they had to find an accountant to represent them, pass several laws that protect taxpayers. These laws provide the following. If you get audited or if the IRS wants any money out of you, you must receive a copy of all your appeal rights from the examination to the collection, the IRS Publication 1, your rights as a taxpayer. You now have the right to be treated fairly, professionally, and promptly, and courteously by IRS employees. This is why you may find a slightly friendlier IRS. However, don't be fooled by the friendlier man. The IRS still just has as much power as it had in the past. You can appeal to the Taxpayer Advocate Service, TAS. This is an independent oversight group that can overturn anything the IRS does with a Taxpayer's Assistance Order, TAO. The Tax Advocate Service can get money back, taken, left a lien, follow up on a refund claim, and much more. So you want to make sure you know about that if you get audited. Significant hardship includes any of the following conditions. There's immediate threat of adverse action. In other words, if you say, you know, hey, this audit is going to create a hardship, put in an application for taxpayer assistance, and, you know, there's an emergency form, Form 9, and the form is called Form 911. Ain't that something? So you do have rights in terms of dealing with this. Now, okay, let's go into the 9 ways to reduce your chances of an IRS audit. Remember, if you get audited, the IRS gives you at least 10 days notice of your desire to record the audit. The IRS can record you as well. In other words, if you're talking to them on the phone and going over what it is that they said the discrepancy is. Okay, there's 9 chances that will help you reduce being audited by the IRS. First is mail your return either by registered mail, return receipt requested, or Federal Express, or electronically e-file. E-filing is one of the best ways to help you make sure that you have less chance of being audited. Send all change of address to the IRS by filling Form 8822, change of address, whenever you move. You want to make sure you send in the change of address when you move. If you get a book from the IRS each year, use the IRS pre-address label to speed up the processing of your tax return. Make sure that your tax return is neat. Couldn't read the return, it wouldn't audit him. This is absolutely false. Although your tax return doesn't have to be tight, it must be neat and easy to read. Legible tax returns create an impression of attention to detail. In addition, you don't want your return to stand out in any way. Okay. Report all of your income. I've heard people do this. You know, been doing their taxes, and they got some 1099s that they don't want to list. And so thus, we don't have total taxable income. Make sure that you report all of your income. Have your return prepared by a competent tax preparer. This is so, so important. And that's why, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, I show you how to legally, morally, and ethically reduce your taxes. Break your income and large expenses into small segments. Income reported to the IRS on Form 1099 should be separate from other income. Separation will help you determine that you are indeed reporting all income earned. Also, break down expenses as far as possible to explain to the IRS examiner exactly what was involved in the expenses. If, for example, you had promotional expenses of $10,000 and that's all that appeared on your tax return, your chance of audit would be significant. However, should your promotion be broken down into travel, advertising, entertaining expenses, you may reduce your chances of audit. So it's important that you break down your expenses. Keep records of expert advice. If you rely on advice from your accountant, your lawyer, or your tax preparer, keep records as to the nature and the date of the advice. This will help you a lot. 15 steps for preparing for an IRS audit. Here's 15 steps that you want to follow to prepare yourself for an audit. Assume that you will be audited whenever you prepare your tax return. Automatically assume that you might be audited. This is important because then you're going to make sure you got all your ducks lined up. Number two, don't panic. An audit notice doesn't indicate that anything is wrong with your tax return. It's simply a request by the IRS to find out if your tax return was properly prepared and determine the proper amount of tax, no more, no less. Generally, you will be notified of an audit by mail, although you could be telephoned, but in most cases, you're not going to get a phone call from the IRS. One, they don't have your phone number on your tax return. Three, try to limit the scope of the audit. There are a number of suggestions here. In an IRS office audit, the IRS tells you what's being examined and set the scope of the audit. In addition, the IRS generally has 3 years from the date you filed your return to audit it. Many times, an audit occurs in the last year or the audit takes longer than usual, and the time limit may run out. In these cases, IRS agents usually ask taxpayers to extend the statute by a year so that they can continue the audit. Your first reaction may be to deny this request, but the IRS simply will disallow many deductions, and you'll be stuck in IRS appeal, or even worse, in court. The best thing you can do is to negotiate an extension, but only regarding specific items on your return, such as travel or entertainment. The reason for limiting the scope of the extension is that if the IRS finds anything after the time limit for the audit expires, it can't assess anything against you except for those items that you agree to the extent. So you want to deal with the scope of the audit. It's almost like if you turn it in and say if the question is around your home-based business deduction, then you put an audit, but you limit the scope. So you say that that's all we're going to discuss. That way if there's something else that they come up with they feel is wrong, it can't do nothing about that. Also, understand that the burden of proof is on you. It's important that you prove. That's why I tell people, make sure that you're giving me all of the proper information. Dress normally for audit. Don't make a special trip to Goodwill Industries to buy clothes for your audit. Don't wear expensive clothes or jewelry such as Rolex watches. IRS examiners dislike people who look like they might be making more money than examiners. Dress and act normally during the entire audit. Don't plead poverty or stupidity. Excuses don't work. Be on time for the audit. Put an asterisk here and burn this point into your head. IRS examiners are graded on efficiency. If you're late for your appointment and cause the auditor to be inefficient or take longer time on the audit than he or she should, you start the audit in an antagonistic environment. Be on time. Best bet, be early. Bring organized information. Make sure that you're prepared to answer questions and deliver documents to the auditor. Again, like I said, if you got the home-based business, you know, deduction, you want to make sure you got your 1098, your mortgage interest statement, your real estate statement. You want to a picture of your home office, how it looks. You want the square footage of your home, the square footage that you use for your business. You want to be organized. The other thing is don't volunteer information. You know, you don't give out no information other than what they ask. And so, you know, it's forever important. Don't leave any ends dangling. Make sure that you answer every question thoroughly. Ask for tax law references. If you think you're right, ask the auditor or agent for the legal references. Don't accept vague statements or interpretations of the law. This is important. I have a client right now who I'm helping, and they told us that it was something that we couldn't do. And I asked them to give me a reference to show us where that is written in the regulations. Don't give in too quickly. You know, don't agree to something that you're not sure. Make sure that they can show you, you know, written that it can be done. Never be alone with a special agent. Special agents are not special. Their job is to investigate criminal actions. If there are two agents to see you, ask whether either of them is a special agent. If so, terminate the meeting and seek out a good criminal tax lawyer. Make sure you, again, make sure you're not there by yourself. Don't ever tamper with the evidence. No backdating of documents or intimidating of witnesses should ever occur. More people get indicted for these items than the original offense because they're easier to prove. And, you know, so it's important that you understand those aspects of being prepared for an audit. Okay, time is ticking away, and I need to begin to wrap this show up. And one last thing we want to cover is to shield yourself from IRS classifying a business as a hobby. Okay, there's some important things that you need to make sure you do. And, again, we covered some of those. And one is, you know, having activity that you're doing, and never say that this is something that you just like to do as a volunteer in terms of doing what you do. See, because if you say, like an example, say you breed dogs and the house that you're renting from, you got a yard, you got dogs, but you tell the landlord that's a hobby, and say the IRS goes to the landlord and says, you know, your tenant, they say they have a breeding business where they breed dogs. Are you aware of that? And the landlord says, well, no, he told me that was his hobby. He said that wasn't no business. Also, you must always want to be able to show that you have a profit motive for your business. That way it's taken out of context of a hobby. And preferably, you want to have a business plan and a separate bank account for all of your business records so you can prove, again, it's a business and it's been running a business-like manner, conducting activities in a business-like manner. Because in your business plan, you're going to have projections and things like that. So it's important that you do that. Have a business plan showing at least 5 or preferably 10 years of projections for revenues and expenses. If your business involves inventory, always have enough on hand to justify your goals in the business plan. Don't make improper statements such as, I'm in this endeavor only to save taxes or to cut costs or to get my products at a discount. If you use the products that you sell, that's personal consumption, and thus it's not considered that you're running a business. You must have clients. Also, make sure that you're constantly getting trained and seeking tips on operating and improving your business. If there's training that you can take, such as if you're in a network marketing business, there's usually always constant training that you can take to help you sharpen your skills. Make sure you take training, document that training that you take and that you pay for to obtain, or if there's business meetings that you go to periodically help you with learning more about your business, make sure you document those things that you're in training so that you can show that, you know, you're in training for a profit motive. Because the bottom line is you want to be able to prove you're in business to earn a profit. The IRS says you must show intent to earn a profit. If you show intent to earn a profit, then you have a legitimate business. And with business, you have income and losses. You know, and so, you know, if you have a loss, that's no problem. because your intent is to make a profit. Your intent is not to lose money. But it's not your fault. If, you know, Walmart loses money every day. Everybody that goes into Walmart, you know, some people buy stuff and then some people they bring it back. So, you know, just like, you know, you in terms of a business, is that have the right to have a profit motive, but at the same time, if you're losing money, then you have the right to write those deductions off and thus proving that you're in business for business purposes. Okay, this is going to wrap up our show for the day. I hope you got something out of this, and what you can do, if you need more information, give us a call at 252-406-0774, and we'd be more than happy to be able to help you with making taxes less stressful. You can also visit us on the web at www.thetaxhelper.com. Thank you for tuning in. And again, I hope this information was helpful for you. Have a blessed and wonderful evening.